Nikola Jokic on Saturday night after his team for the second straight night beat DeAndre Ayton and the Phoenix Suns.
Give the guy credit. He's amazing. He's really solid. He knows what he knows, and he knows like what he needs to work. I think that's the best thing that kind of young player can have that mindset. He played really good defense. He stopped me 5, 6, 7, 8 times. Give that guy credit. He was really good tonight.
DeAndre Ayton today, Gambo said, "Thanks. I appreciate every nice thing you just said about me."
That's amazing. I'm doing something right. I give him his praise. You know what he mean to me. That's the number one center in this league to me. And just what he do and what he brings to the game is tremendous. And I always look up at him and try to take things from him. And just try to learn from it and put it in my game as well. No matter how you try to shut this dude down, he still finds a way, to be the player he is. And, I love competing against him and, talk here and there while we battling. And, it's just good spirits. And just to hear that, he means, making me want to keep working for real, just hearing the recognition of my hard work is amazing. I just want to keep working harder and harder.
Good. Good.
Yeah, because probably not getting any of that praise from his son's teammates. They're all pushing him. You want to get some love, it's got to be from somebody else. He's like, DeAndre's going, I'm saying, man, I guess I am pretty good. Man, these other guys are telling me I stink, and I'm not doing this right, I'm not doing that right, I'm not getting back. And then I got this guy telling me that I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread. Yeah, he's probably not getting that same praise from the Suns.
You're going to have Monty calling Jokic, dude, you keep it down, please.
Exactly.
Seriously, we're trying to control this situation here, and I don't need you popping off at the mouth, telling everyone how great DeAndre Ayton is. You're not helping our cause here, all right? We're trying to keep this situation manageable. You're not helping things a little bit.
You call DeAndre Ayton's phone, that's what plays. Jokic saying all those nice things about him.
That's funny. That is really funny. It's funny because it's funny, but it's also funny because it's partially true. I mean, the Suns have, they've been complimentary of Ayton. I don't want to make it sound like it's been a constant rip session, but they have been, man. They're pushing and they're trying to not let him be comfortable and not be satisfied and not think that he's arrived and all of that stuff. And while they've been complimentary of him, I don't think they've gushed about him like that, at least not.
No.
Not publicly, I don't think they've gushed about him like that. But maybe there's an example that I'm missing, but I don't think so.
Yeah, they're trying not to let anything go to his head. They want to continue to motivate him. And one of the ways to motivate him is, look, you throw him a bone now and then, but you're always constantly pushing these, to play better because there's other levels that he could get to, and you don't want to be satisfied. You don't want to be content. So they're going to continue to push him so he can keep, getting to levels that he hasn't played at yet in his career.
Yeah, but still, for Ayton, he's going through an incredible four-game stretch right now, and I know it's just four games, okay? And that's why I appreciate what the Suns are trying to do in terms of kind of managing this situation, because he's turned this corner, and the question we all want to know is it for good? Is this a permanent thing? Is this who he is now? I mean, because he. You think about how rapid he made the transition. It was just about a week ago, I believe, maybe a little bit more, that you and I were having that conversation. It was in the week after when they were shut down after the Washington game.
When we were talking about
him and were they going to trade him or not trade him? Were they going to bench him? All of that stuff. The way he has quickly transformed, not his defensive game, that's always been solid, but the way he's quickly transformed his offensive game, that happened really fast, didn't it? I mean, it just like he went from doing everything we hated to everything we loved, and it seemingly happened overnight with DeAndre Ayton. It's strange that it happened that quick.
I think that tells you a couple of different things. First and foremost, it's inside of him. He has the ability to do that. He's 7 feet tall, and he has the ability to do that. Why he was passive aggressive? Is that what it's called? Why he was so passive on that? Why he wasn't as aggressive as people? I don't know. I mean, we'll never really know why. But That was there. That was inside of him. He clearly has the ability to play at that level. He had to take control of it. And I think that's what James Jones said when he was on with us. I mean, he controls a lot of it. You know, you sit there and say, well, it's up to this guy to get him the ball and that guy to get him the ball. And I think James came on and said, look, he controls a lot of what he can do. He's getting plenty of touches. He's just got to take advantage of those.
Yeah, and that's where the growth in his game has been. If you watch a typical DA touch in the post, I mean, it seemed like in the past it would result in a 10 to 15-foot fadeaway jump shot or a kick back out to somebody else. These last three or four games, we're seeing DeAndre Ayton dribble aggressively to get better post-up position, using his body, using his agility, using his really fluid athleticism to get himself better shots at the rim to make the guy defending him actually work and move his feet. I mean, it's been – and to think that that was in there all along – and he was wasting his time with 15-foot fadeaways. You know, that's the part that just drives you absolutely crazy. But that's fine. As long as this version of DA is the one that mostly consistently shows up every night, then you'll take this version of him and you'll go as far as it can take you. And I tend to think that when Booker and Chris come around, it's going to take you very, very far if this is who DeAndre Ayton is. I hope he stays there. You know, I hope we don't look back at it and say, that was a nice six-game stretch. Where did that guy go? I hope we're not having that conversation 3 weeks from now, because then what good will have it done, right? Other than to show him what he's capable of.
Okay, but what if he has two games in a row in which where he doesn't dominate? I mean, we can't go back to that. I mean, because it's not going to be – he's 22 years old. You're not going to get that every game. You're just not – you're asking for something that's just not going to happen.
I think reasonable minded people like you and me will be able to say, okay, it's just two games, let's see. I think some people will look at those two games and they'll freak out. I think what'll happen to me, I can't speak for you on this one, when he has back to back games where he's not playing that aggressively, I won't worry after two, I'll worry after four, five, seven, eight.
Fair.
You know? Okay, but after two, I'm not going to lose my mind over two. I don't think it's fair to lose your mind over two. But I think it is fair after four or five games of that passive play, if it returns, to wonder those things. But I know people who judge the Suns, in particular on social media, won't always be like that. If he has one game where he's passive, they might start screaming about him again. I think it's fair to understand he's still going to have some of those nights every now and then.
Yeah, and he is. And that's the thing, because he's not – the superstars in this league, like we say, they don't have many of those off nights. Great players in this league, that you know, they're going to have 10 to 20 of those, you know, but that's still in an 82-game season. You're talking about a guy playing 60 to 65 great games out of 82. That's what separates the great players from the good players. You know, for DeAndre Ayton, you know, there will be times when, you know, it just the ball doesn't go his way, it doesn't bounce his way, or he's got a bad matchup or whatever. But there are things that he can control, and that is the defensive rebounding, the anchoring the defense, the, you know, trying to get some block shots. And I think that's going to be the consistent part of his game. The defensive rebound, the elite rebounding, even some of the offensive rebounding that we're starting to see now. He had six the other night. I think that's the part of his game that he can really control, and I think that's going to be very consistent.
Yeah, he was asked today during his – and that answer about Jokic was from today's media availability, as is this. Where has your game improved the most? He cited Chris Paul quite a bit.
I'd say the defensive end. Chris Paul letting me know the type of anchor I am on the defensive end for this team. And, you know, just having confidence with somebody on the floor – even when he doesn't have the ball, you know, just Chris Paul just being our facilitator and, you know, just finding us in our spots and keeping a certain pace to this game and keeping us in our offenses. You know, it's a lot of chemistry we have to work on, but it brings a fluidity when it comes to the game of basketball and how to play it. Jay Crowder brings a big piece. You know, we've seen him last game knocking down the biggest shots. You know, dudes who've been in situations who are sophisticated. It's a lot, man, and it's contagious. It's very contagious, you know, to bring that type of competitiveness to a young group, and we're ready.
Which is exactly what we wanted to see Chris Paul and Jay Crowder do to DeAndre Ayton, right? Change his mentality a little bit. Have him look at the game differently.
Yeah, and it got through to him because obviously you hear that over and over and over again, and you want to do something about it. If you care, you want to do something about it. Now, you remember when I said, hey, listen, this guy's going to get $50 million no matter what just because he's 7 feet tall and 250 pounds. So he's going to get set $50 million. Now the question is, do you get 100? Do you get 150? Or do you get 200? Rudy Gobert got 200. So that's the question. He's got $50 million in the bank on his next contract no matter what. He's getting $50 million. Now it's a matter of if he's consistently in this range playing like that, I mean, that's approaching, you know, that's approaching the $150 million contract for DeAndre Ayton. That's talking really big money right there if you could dominate games the way he has these last four.
No doubt about it. Speaking of the Suns, announcement just came down a moment ago that their game Thursday against the Golden State Warriors has been picked up by TNT. So that is now going to be a national audience watch Kelly Oubre's first game against Phoenix since the Chris Paul trade. I'm sorry, what did you say?
You know what to say? You know what's sad? As you said that, announcement came down from the Suns, Thursday's game against... I'm waiting for you to say it's been postponed.
Oh,
I am so programmed with all of these NBA postponements and the Suns having three of them that when you say there's an announcement coming down from the Suns about Thursday's game with Golden State, my first thought is that you're going to throw that the game's been postponed, coronavirus contract tracing with somebody.
That is sad. I understand why you feel that way, but I totally get it. That is a sign of the times, isn't it? It's been postponed.
That's a Petula Clark song, by the way. It's a sign of the times.
It's also the name of a Prince album, but
it's a sign of the times.
Two totally different points of view.
That's what I was bracing for. I was bracing for you saying that the game's going to be postponed.
Yeah. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, not one player was elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame today, but all of the attention is surrounding a former Diamondback for a couple of different reasons. The very latest coming up next on the Burns and Gambo show. 5 o'clock hour, the Burns and Gambo show, 517 to be exact. Thanks for hanging out with us. Nobody was elected into the Baseball Hall of Fame today. Nobody got the requisite 75%. Former Diamondback pitcher Curt Schilling came the closest. He got about 71%. He was 16 votes shy of getting in. There were 14 blank ballots that were submitted, completely blank. Not a single name voted on any of those ballots. Barry Bonds, 62%. Clemens, 61.5%. They're kind of flat right now. Scott Rowland had like 53%. So nobody gets in, and that's not a surprise, at least not to us. We were kind of reading through some stories suggesting this very thing might happen. Now, Bonds has 1 year left. Clemens has 1 year left. Schilling has 1 year left. Next year's A-Rod's first year. So all this controversy over who you vote for, who you don't, it's just going to ramp up. But things got ramped up a notch thanks to a letter that Curt Schilling posted on his Facebook page that was quickly circulated around Major League Baseball, indicating his desire to be removed from the final year of voting. I will not participate in the final year of voting. I am requesting to be removed from the ballot, he wrote in this letter on his Facebook page.
Yeah, because he doesn't trust the baseball writers who are not voting for him, and he'd rather just leave it up to the people that played the game. This letter, Curt sent me this letter, you know, before he posted it to Facebook, so I had a chance to read it, this letter that he posted. And there's a couple of things in here that I think are very interesting. One is that he would have went in as an Arizona Diamondback. He would have went in as a Diamondback, not, you know.
That is very interesting, yes.
Yes, he would have went in as a D-back. So, I think I am friends with him on Facebook. But, I talked to him about whether he was going to get in. He thought he was going to end up 10 votes shy. And, you know, this process has been, you know, his wife has cancer. Shonda has cancer. And they're dealing with a lot family-wise. And, Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people in the media that he doesn't like and he doesn't trust, and so he would rather not go through this again next year and not have those people decide his fate. He would rather have the Veterans Committee and those people decide whether he gets in or not and not have the writers decide. So he's asking to be taken out.
Here's the line about the Diamondbacks. Quote, I've chosen Arizona as the team I would have represented if I had been inducted, and even though I heard someone there is calling for the D-backs front office to meet should the induction happen, I'll stand with that decision as I know Mr. Kendrick to be an honorable and kind man. Should that change, it most certainly would be the Phillies. What Mr. Henry and Mr. Werner did to my family and I in my final year has been forgiven, but will never be forgotten, talking about Mr. Henry and Mr. Werner from the Boston Red Sox. And he apologizes over the course of the letter for taking up an insane amount of length, but he said, I kind of needed an outlet. I needed to just kind of to vent a little bit and talk about what's going on. He's upset that he is, quote, somehow in a conversation with two men who cheated, and instead of being accountable, they chose to destroy other lives to protect their lie. Of course, he's talking about Bonds and Clemens, we would presume, in saying that right there. But yeah, he says, I'm requesting to be removed from the ballot. I'll defer to the Veterans Committee and men whose opinion actually matter and who are in a position to actually judge a player. I don't think I'm a Hall of Famer, as I've often stated, but if former players think I am, then I will accept that with honor. And you know, obviously, the Veterans Committee will... I don't know if they'll look at Kurt. I think Kurt is assuming the Veterans Committee will look at him in a different light than the baseball writers, because obviously the baseball writers are using his controversial political stance against him. I don't know if the Veterans Committee will look at him any differently, but I think he's kind of counting on that. At least it sounds like from the letter that he's counting on the Veterans Committee to look at him a little bit differently. Well,
he says he's not a Hall of Famer. He said that,
yeah,
you know.
I read that part, yeah.
Yeah, he said, I wanted to reiterate this final point. I will not participate in the final year voting. I'm requesting to be removed. I'll defer to the Veterans Committee. I don't think I'm a Hall of Famer, as I've often stated, but if former players think I am, then I'll accept that with honor. Look, I know that this hurt him, and I know that he was bothered by this. And he could say that, but, you know, he was super close last year, and he's super close this year. And for some reason, there are people, and it's their right, but they decided not to vote for him.
Yeah.
They don't think he's
and
a
we
Hall
know
of
what
Famer,
the reason
they don't
is.
Like him, what, you know? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it could be. Yeah. I mean, it could be people that don't think he's a Hall of Famer too. I mean, there could be people
could
that
be.
Say
you're
great
right.
Postseason,
you know,
but I don't think that your credentials stack up as a Hall of Famer.
You're,
so that's
you're very
possible
right. You know
too.
What?
Yeah.
Yep, that's a good counterpoint. You're right. There could be those people. I find it just fascinating he would have gone in as a Diamondback, because I'll be honest with you, I probably would have, not knowing Kurt that well. I mean, I obviously covered him when he was here, and you know, we spoke then, and we've had him on the show a few times over the years, of course. But I would have just assumed, judging his career from afar, that the Diamondbacks would have been third on the list, that it would have been Red Sox or Phillies one, the other two, and the Arizona Diamondbacks three, just because he wasn't here. It was very noteworthy what he did when he was here, but, you know, Philly always felt like it was home for him, and of course what he did in Boston is the stuff of legends. So
yeah, but he mentioned
I'm very surprised
that.
To hear that he would have done Arizona. Oh, yeah,
well,
he
addresses
yeah.
that in his letter. What Mr. Henry and Mr. Werner did to my family and I in my final year has never been forgiven, but will never be forgotten. He addresses it. He was never going to go into a Red
Sox. Yeah, I'm saying that would have been my perception of him before I read this letter. Before I read this letter, if you had said to me, hey, who do you think Kurt Schilling is going to represent in the Hall of Fame, I would have said Boston 1 or 2, Philly 1 or 2, Diamondbacks 3. But now I read the letter and I understand it's never going to be that way if he even gets in. I don't know if he would have been voted in next year. To be, I mean, I understand his gesture of taking himself off the ballot next year. I don't know if he would have gotten in even if he were on the ballot next year after what happened this year.
He doesn't want to put his family
you know?
Through this anymore. And you know, he doesn't want to put his family through it. I will wait, and I will let the Veterans Committee and others decide on my fate, and I don't want to put it in the hands of these writers. Because, you know, he just... you know, again, I mean, I'm sure he could say, oh, I don't think I'm a Hall of Famer. What he did in the postseason, his postseason numbers, the, you know, the 3,000 strikeouts, the three-time runner-up for the Cy Young, there are a lot of things that can point to him as a player as being, okay, you should be in the Hall of Fame. And I'm sure he's thought about that. He may not want to say it, but I'm sure he believes that he's a Hall of Famer. I do. I think in his heart he believes that he's a Hall of Fame pitcher.
Yeah, real quick, as I'm gonna ask Cody to play the breaking news sounder if he could, because we do have breaking news that we want to pass along to everybody out there. If you could,
Arizona Sports breaking news:
Devin Booker is listed as out on the Suns injury report for Wednesday's game against the Oklahoma City Thunder. He will not play tomorrow night against Oklahoma City. Dario Saric and Damian Jones remain out as well due to health and safety protocols. Reading directly from Kellen Olsen's Twitter account, he must have gotten the email from the organization with the latest injury report. No Devin Booker tomorrow night against Oklahoma City, Gambo. That's the breaking news.
Okay, there you go. So another game without Book. You're trying to get these guys to play together because, you know, you want Chris Paul and Devin Booker to get on the same page, and now you're going to have another game without Devin Booker. So that sucks, but, you know, it is what it is. They've got to find ways to win basketball games. I mean, this Oklahoma City team is, they just beat Portland the other night. They play hard and, you know, not the easiest game. So we've got to find a way to win without Booker.
When we come back here on the Burns and Gambo Show, the king of mock drafts has released his latest, and the trend continues for the Cardinals. It's all defense so far in these mocks. That's coming up next on the Burns and Gambo. All right, the king of the mock drafts might be a little strong, but he is Mel Kiper Jr., draft expert. He's the guy who basically created the role of draft insider, right? I mean, before Mel Kiper Jr., was there even such a thing? I don't think so. He was like the first of his kind.
He was
kind of a revolutionary. So when he comes out with a mock, I mean, God knows he's not any more accurate than anybody else is. It's a mock. It's inherently inaccurate. But because he's Mel Kiper Jr., we tend to pay it a little more attention. Well, today, Mel Kiper Jr. came out with Mock Draft 1.0, and in it, he has the Arizona Cardinals going with a cornerback, Caleb Farley, out of Virginia Tech with the 16th pick overall. Continuing generally, I would think, Gambo, a trend of these mocks with the Cardinals going defense. There have been a few I've seen with offensive players. The one, McShay's first mock draft that had him take an ETN from Clemson. But for the most part, I feel like the ones we've seen, it's been pretty heavy on the defensive players so far at number 16.
Yeah, and I think everybody's going to look. When you do a mock draft, they look at need more than anything. They look at need. What does this team need? And then you look at the free agent. So you look at the Cardinals and you say, you don't know if Patrick Peterson's going to be back. You don't know if Drake Kirkpatrick's going to be back. You know the Robert Alford's not going to be back. You say, God, they need a cornerback. They need a cornerback,
right.
And they need a cornerback bad. So you start to look at the corners that are available. And, you know, Caleb Farley, he's big. He's strong. Now, he didn't play this year. He's one of those guys that opted out and did not play at Virginia Tech. So, you know, you have last year to go by, but you don't have this year to go by. Now, I don't hold it against those guys. I mean, he decided not to play for Virginia Tech this year and get ready for the draft. And, you know, he's not the only one. Several key players decided not to play this year. But when you're looking for corner help, you know, this is a guy that was a quarterback at one point in high school. He was a converted wide receiver that's come in, and he ended up being a very good corner. So I'm a little leery of those guys. You know, he came in as a wide receiver, but now he's a corner. A little leery, but overall, okay. there's good size and there's strength and there's speed and there's a lot of things that you could like about him.
Yeah, it's a good thing to be leery of, and I hate to compare every single guy who's moved positions to Brandon Williams because that's not fair at all. But I'd be lying to everybody if I didn't say that was kind of the first thing that went through my head when I heard a guy was this, but now he's that, you know. And that just that, and I'm sure I could come up with 1,000 successful drafted players who were one thing converted to another player, and they were drafted at that converted position, and they did just fine. So it's not fair. It's just that's sort of the first thing I think of when I hear he's a converted player. I think of Brandon Williams and how it was a mistake to reach for a player like that.
He came in as an athlete, which a lot of guys do. You know, you play both ways in high school, and you play offense, you play defense, and you get recruited as an athlete. So when he got to Virginia Tech in 2017, he was an athlete. And their plan was that he would play wide receiver. But then he had a knee injury. He missed the entire year. And after that, they were good at wide receiver. So they said, how about cornerback? And so then in 2018, he played cornerback. And, you know, he had a couple of interceptions, played 13 games. He was a full-time defensive player. So came in as an athlete. The thought was you'll play wide receiver. And then got hurt, knee injury, didn't play, and came back. And they converted him to corner. So he's been a full-time corner for the 2 years at Virginia Tech.
But I liked what you said a lot about these guys who decided not to play, the opt-out players, and how, I mean, it's just going to be an unavoidable fact of life of the 2021 NFL draft. You are going to have to be put in a position where, and not just opt-out guys who played a shortened season, guys who, you know, maybe played in the Big Ten or the Pac-12, didn't play as many games as you would like. There's not as much tape. I mean, two of the recent names that we've seen attached to the Cardinals in fairly prominent mock drafts, Caleb Farley was an opt-out guy, and then, of course, the other was that Jalen Phillips player from Miami. And he wasn't an opt-out guy, but he's got very little tape because of injuries and a concussion and didn't play a lot. I mean, this draft, it feels like more than any. No scouting combine, at least none that is typical to the process. Players playing on a shortened season, players playing no season. This draft is going to be one of the most unusual and probably one of the most difficult to prepare for that's ever existed in the NFL, right? I mean, it's just going to be weird if you're Steve Keim or any one of the 31 GMs trying to prep for this. You'll do the best you can, but it's going to be tough because of all these different factors in all of this.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, last year was difficult too. So you go 2 years in a row with it being kind of difficult. And, you know, you're so used to, you know, your visits that you get with these teams. And, you know, when you don't have those, now you got to rebound. You got to find a way to get the information and make sure you make the right pick. Now, you know, this year's draft is very important for the Arizona Cardinals. There's a lot of needs, and you know, you go into every draft and you say they're all important, right? But this,
sure.
You know, they need impact players. I mean, they need guys that could come in and play right away and help because they've got, you know, so many key players that they're probably going to lose through free agency and not bringing guys back.
But if they address the cornerback position either through a trade or through free agency or through both, then you can see why a lot of these mocks, especially at this point in the process, they are typically need-based kind of mocks. And it's just, and I think that's probably mostly why mock drafts are usually wrong, right? I mean, most mock drafters just kind of look at a team, well, they need a this, so let's give them a that. And they need a that, so let's give them a this. And I think when it actually comes to draft night, you know, a team will say, yeah, we, you know, did anybody think the Packers were going to draft a quarterback last year in Jordan Love? No, because they didn't need one.
Right.
But that's what they felt like they had to do. And I think that's where mock drafts kind of, it's hard to project something other than just straight up, flat out need when it comes to a draft. And that's what makes it so difficult. Mel Kiper, maybe the most, okay, five quarterbacks in the first 15 in his mock. That's interesting. But one of them, he doesn't have going to the New York Jets. He has the Jets taking Devontae Smith out of Alabama number 2 and basically betting on Sam Darnold turning the corner in 2021 and that being the year he puts it all together. That's a real interesting way of looking at it, I think.
Yeah, when you draft, listen, wide receivers, you know, obviously important, but, you know, they're going to touch the ball 5 or 6 times a game. And this kid's dynamic. I mean, there's no question this kid is great. And he's going to participate in some meetings and everything at the Senior Bowl, but he's not going to participate on the field because he dislocated his finger in the national championship game against Ohio State. And I don't think he's going to, like, get measured or anything, right? They're not going to measure his height or weight or anything like that. They're going to wait till his pro day.
Right. The Senior Bowl is this week, and he decided not to have those measurables measured.
Right. And I joked earlier because, you know, he might be able to, you know, might be able to gain 2 or 3 inches in the next couple of months.
Well, he's a growing young man. He still might have that.
Man, that kid was so good. Can he be great in the NFL? I mean, he was so...
Can Devontae? Yes.
God, he was so great. He's so small and skinny, and he doesn't weigh anything. But, man, I mean, I can't imagine him getting hit by a big-time safety in this league. But he's just – he's hard to catch. He's hard to run with. He catches everything. He's just – you know, maybe the Jets take him number 2 overall. Remember, the Jets took Keyshawn Johnson number 1 overall. And
sure.
That didn't work out for them. It was okay, but it wasn't great.
Yeah.
And now you're going to take a wide receiver number 2. I mean, you usually that early you're looking for – you're not looking for a wide receiver that early. You're just not usually looking for a wide receiver at number 2. Maybe you trade down. But if you trade down, you may lose this kid because he's that dynamic. Can't take the chance that you move down 3 spots and he's going to be there.
For what it's worth, the 5 quarterbacks he had going in the top 15, he had Trevor Lawrence, number 1 at Jacksonville. He had your guy Zach Wilson from BYU going to Atlanta at 4. He had the Ohio State quarterback Justin Fields going to the Lions at number 7, Trey Lance going to the Panthers at 8, and Alabama's Mac Jones going to the Patriots at number 15. He also, in his write-up about the Cardinals, did mention, I could also see the Cardinals keeping an eye on the wide receivers in this class. Christian Kirk has not been consistent enough to show that he can be their number 2 alongside DeAndre Hopkins. Oh, good. More resources being thrown at the wide receiver position by the Cardinals, as if they haven't tried that so many times over the last 3 or 4 years, right? So, man, a first rounder after back-to-back second rounders and DeAndre Hopkins and another first rounder?
No,
jeez,
right.
That just – I get a headache just thinking about that.
Yeah, no, I get it, but, you know – I mean, you know, you have a first-round pick, a second-round pick, a third-round pick, a fourth-round pick, a fifth-round pick, a sixth-round pick. You got to figure at some point, and I know that, you know, they took the 3 wide receivers, and it's aggravating, but you got to figure at some point they've got to either cut bait with these guys or just believe in them. I mean, it's one or the other, because I don't know what to think of Isabella right now. I was very high on Isabella, but they didn't really use him that much, and I was very high on Keyshawn Johnson, and they didn't lose him that. And I wasn't high on Hakeem Butler. I wasn't, and they got rid of him, but the other two I was kind of high on, but they just haven't used him. So would they draft – would they draft a cornerback again? I mean, a wide receiver again? I think they will because of all the picks that they have.
Yeah, when we come back, would Bruce Arians still be the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals if the 2017 draft had fallen the way they thought it was going to? An interesting question that was posed to BA, and you'll hear his answer coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Yourself back to the 2017 draft in the NFL. We were just talking about Mel Kiper's mock draft. 2017, of course, Bruce Arians is, you know, still the coach of the Arizona Cardinals at that point. Cardinals have the 13th pick overall in that draft, and they were probably thinking, knowing that Carson Palmer was near the end of his career, they were probably thinking that Mahomes, whom they liked, or Deshaun Watson, whom they liked, would be there at number 13. Chiefs get aggressive. They move up to 10. They take Mahomes. The Texans get aggressive. They move up to 12. One spot before the Cardinals. And they take Deshaun Watson. And in that moment, Bruce Arians, when he was on with Doug and Wolf today, revealed that it was a very chaotic, quick jumping that happened in the draft that year as the Cardinals were sitting in their war room.
You know, it was kind of crazy that day. It's very, very vivid. You know, we're sitting there and we got him. We got one of the two. We're either going to get Patrick or we're going to get Deshaun, because neither one of these teams need a quarterback. Then Kansas City trades up and we go, they're not taking a quarterback. They got Alex Smith. And there goes Pat. Then Houston trades up and they take Deshaun. And it's like, wow, there was 30 some seconds that those things happen in were amazing to change a lot of things for a lot of franchises.
Yeah. Think about all the franchises whose future was altered in that moment, right? It's
yeah. I mean, Kansas City had Alex Smith. If they didn't draft Mahomes, you know, where would they be? I mean, the Cardinals wouldn't have Kyler Murray, and they probably would not even have the Hopkins either, right? Because it's very likely, unlikely that all of that stuff would have worked out. They liked Mahomes better than Watson, and if they had their choice, if the Cardinals were going to take Mahomes, and then Mahomes got taken, and then they were going to take Watson, and then Houston moved up and they got Watson, and the Cardinals ended up with Reddick. But they would have taken both of those guys before they took Hassan Reddick. So there's no question, and that's the truth. They would have taken Mahomes over Watson, and when Mahomes was gone, they would have taken Watson over Reddick. But both of those guys were gone. They ended up with Hassan Reddick.
Yeah, and with that, the follow-up question, and by the way, a tip of the hat and kudos to Doug and Wolf and Aaron and the morning team for getting Bruce Arians on, you know, 48 hours after he earned a trip to the Super Bowl as head coach of the Buccaneers. Doug asked Bruce, kind of the question that I think a lot of Cardinal fans wanted to hear asked of Bruce.
Are you still the head coach of the Cardinals if those 30 seconds didn't happen and you have one of those guys?
You know, that's hard to say. It's so much dependent on my health. And those guys might have made it a little bit easier.
I joked earlier, Gambo, I know what no sounds like, and that wasn't a no. That was not a no.
He doesn't know.
No, he has no idea. I mean, I guess he could have just said, I was probably going to retire anyway. But it's you know, if you – I would imagine a guy like Patrick Mahomes, you know, you see him and you think, man, I get to coach this kid for the next few years, kind of get your juices flowing and maybe makes you rethink any retirement thoughts that you might have. I don't know. You're probably right. He probably doesn't know. But at least he didn't slam the door. He kept it open. Yeah, I might have. I don't know. Who knows? We'll see. You know, he gave what I thought was a pretty honest answer to the question when it was all said and done.
I remember when he retired, and I was just looking at a quote. He says, I probably truly didn't know until that kick went through that I was going to retire. And everybody speculates for months. You now have the story. Like I said, it's been an unbelievable journey. The tears you see are really tears of joy. Peace. I'll miss the players. I'll miss coming out of the locker room, hearing the national anthem because it still gets me. Look, it was a disappointing season. He, in 5 years with the Cardinals, got to the playoffs a couple of times, won 49 games and lost 30 and tied one. And he was a very good football coach for the Cardinals. But that run was over. I mean, that run was over. Those players were gone and they gotten old and you were losing Carson and there was going to be a rebuild. There was going to be a different team. And I don't think that he had the patience for that after having a team that went to the playoffs twice. I don't think he had the patience for a rebuild project. He wouldn't have came back for a young team, you know, that was going to take 3 or 4 years. He went to Tampa and, you know, within a year he got Tom Brady and now he's in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think, I mean, look, all I know is this. Would he have stayed if they had gotten Mahomes? Would he have stayed if they had gotten Watson? I have absolutely no idea. I mean, I really, really don't. All I know is this, and we've talked about this a couple of times today. I don't hold it against Bruce Arians one bit for retiring from the Arizona Cardinals, taking a year off, realizing he missed it too damn much,
right,
having an opportunity in front of him like the Bucs, and taking that job. And I know there are some Cardinal fans who feel differently than that. I know there are some Cardinal fans who, frankly, don't want Bruce Arians to have success with Tampa, won't root for them in the Super Bowl because they feel like BA abandoned them. But if I'm being honest with you and everybody who's listening, if I remember my mindset on that day when Bruce spoke those words that you just read, I remember thinking it was probably the right decision for both parties, that it had, the time had come for something different, and it was time to move on. It was time for both parties to try a different approach because things had kind of plateaued with Bruce Arians for a couple of years. It just wasn't really going anywhere positive, it wasn't really going anywhere negative. And so I didn't mind it that he retired. And so I'm not going to sit here and get all, well, I'm not rooting for Bruce Arians because he abandoned us. I didn't feel that then, so why would I feel that now? I just don't look at it that way, you know?
Listen, I mean, there are some people that, I mean, he was 65 years old when he retired. I mean, he who would have thought that he would get another job? Because, you know, I mean, he's going to coach into his 70s now, probably. But I think, you know, since some people, they just, you know, they get bored. They don't want, you know, he talked about the forever home and being on the lake and all that. He talked about all that stuff. But when push came to shove, man, he couldn't do it. When push came to shove, he doesn't want to do that. He'll do that his last few years of life. He wants to coach. He's a coach. And some people can't, you know, they retire and then they realize that they miss what they did. They miss what they loved. That was what they loved. And then they decide, okay, I want to go back. I don't want to be retired. I should have never retired because I miss what I did.
Yeah. I wish him well. We did a poll question. I think the majority of our audience at least wishes him well. I know you're not going to root for the Bucks, but you wish Bruce well. You can't root for the Bucks because of Brady, and I totally get that. But you're not rooting for them because of anything Bruce Arians did or didn't do. I haven't decided who I'm rooting for in this game. I might end up rooting for the Bucks, not because of Brady, but because of Bruce. And just it'd be kind of cool to see him. It'd be kind of cool to see him get one. But we'll see. Time for the Coors Light. What's on tonight? The games that we are going to watch this evening, brought to you by our good friends over at Coors Light. Coyotes hockey on tap this evening, 7 o'clock faceoff. The Anaheim Ducks are at Gila River Arena taking on the Coyotes tonight at 7 o'clock, Gambo, as the Coyotes are coming off that stretch where they lost three of the four games they played against the Vegas Golden Knights. Coming up tonight.
Easily could have split those four games. They played really well in three of them. There's only one game they didn't play very well. Anaheim's a team that they're going to compete with Anaheim and San Jose and Minnesota for that fourth spot. You know, Vegas is clearly one of the best teams in the league. Colorado and St. Louis will get playoff spots. So now you're really fighting for that fourth spot with those teams. So these games against Anaheim will be important.
Yeah, so that's coming up at 7 o'clock this evening. And again, if you missed the big news, no Devin Booker tomorrow night against the Thunder. He's been ruled out by the Phoenix Suns. James Jones tomorrow at 3:30. We're out of here. We'll see you tomorrow at straight up 2 o'clock here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Have a great night, everyone.